Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with labral tear expert, run coach, and physiotherapist Sarah Louie from Legacy Rehab and Performance. Sarah and I spoke about sources for hip pain, injury prevention, but also tips to start running again after an injury. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find it helpful. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now onto my conversation with Sarah. Sarah Louie, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to talk to you. I'm excited to talk about your area of expertise, which is labral tear and just all things sort of running, rehab, prevention, and so on. So yeah, very excited for our conversation today, Sarah. But let me ask you, what is the number one thing you're looking forward to the listener to take away from our conversation?
Yes, I love this. I love this like kind of preemptive question. I think the biggest thing that I'm so passionate about for women, specifically like women in their 30s, 40s, 50s, like after that 30-year mark, I feel like I see so many women just lose hope in the capacity or dream of being able to be a runner, whether that's like a consistent recreational runner, or that's like someone who wants to qualify for Boston or run ultra marathon. So I'm really excited to maybe dispel some of the myths that we can't continue to be runners past 30, and specifically with like specific hip diagnoses that we get, you know, on MRI, X-ray. I'm like hoping to dispel some of those fears to kind of show women that we can keep running past
That's
30.
amazing. I love it. I know that many of the listeners are going to be excited about that. And maybe we can also talk about some reasons why people should get into running if they're currently just doing strength training, quote unquote, just, or, you know, walking, things like that. But tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Yes, for sure. So, what my name is Sarah. I am a doctor of physical therapy and a run coach. And my biggest kind of like specialty or biggest passion project is helping women runners with hip pain get back to running without pain and with lots of confidence. I was a runner pretty much my whole life. I grew up playing soccer and kind of transitioned into running, recreational running, maybe like mid high school. And then really continued in college and grad school and beyond. I have gotten more into racing as I've gotten older, but honestly, running has just been like such a great anchor point for me of like that stress relief point. Like you get to experience new places by running or like get to know your neighborhood really well. And when I was around 26, 27, I started to have like this dull, achy hip pain that genuinely came out of nowhere. And I was like, what is this? And as I kind of got into the medical system myself, I was like, this is super murky. This is really challenging to like navigate what this is and how to get back to the goal of running. And it was so funny. At the same time, I was also seeing a bunch of women in my old practice, so in my old job, and I work for kind of corporate healthcare, going through the same experience. And they were working moms, they were busy professionals, and they were like not getting the answers that they needed in the time frame that they needed. They weren't getting the help that they needed to get back to just this high level activity of running. So like through my personal experience and through like my clinical experience, I was like, there's a huge gap here. And I decided to really go all in on my practice, my programs, where I really bridge the gap between finishing rehab and like getting back to this high level activity of running, really at whatever capacity people want.
I love that. So it's obviously come from a place of passion, personal interest, and curiosity, but at the same time also service. So very, very cool. And yeah, I mean, you touched on something so important, which is like if we're incapacitated in one way, shape, or form, it also affects our mental health. And then nothing worse than you try and you find some answers and get some support, and then your response or someone's response is, okay, we have the next appointment in 6 months type of thing. You're like, what? Like, what am I supposed to do in six for the next 6 months? Just like do nothing, work through the pain. Is this going to make it better or worse? So I'm so thankful that there are people like you that are able to assist without or you know with good knowledge, but not necessarily having to base everything that you do on an MRI or so. So tell us a little bit about your area of expertise, which is a labral tear. Tell us maybe what it is, why it happens, and then we can talk about how to treat it, hopefully.
Yes, for sure. Okay, awesome question. So I would say like my biggest passion in the hip is maybe some of these like non-soft tissue injuries. So if we look at the hip, we think there's so many structures around it. Maybe allow me to nerd out for a minute. Like there's a bunch of muscles that attach into our hip. There's a ton of nerves that kind of go through there. We have a lot of referral points from like our low back, like our discs, our joints, all of that stuff. Of course, we have like fascia, blood vessels, all of these crazy things. And then we also have there's like the joint cartilage. So we have the cartilage tissues that are at the joint, the hip joint, as well as like the bone that is there. And I feel like my passion is the structures that are really deep. So the labrum is just this fancy cartilage structure that kind of sits in the socket of the ball and socket joint. The hip joint is a ball and socket joint, so it sits in the socket. And it just kind of like increases like the suction or the congruency of the hip. And this is like my favorite, I think it's my favorite tissue in the body. But oftentimes women, men, whoever, can get tearing of this area if there's just like repetitive forces through that. Oftentimes labral tears are not traumatic, meaning they're just kind of more degenerative in nature. If you kind of think of like a door swinging on a hinge, if it's kind of like off axis a little bit and maybe it's rubbing at the upper point as opposed to the lower point of that like hinge point, there's just going to be more rubbing and then we can get some like degenerative tearing over time. I would say that's kind of like the most common reason why people get labral tears. That's one tissue I'm super passionate about. Another thing that's really common with that finding specifically on MRI is like impingement. So either the ball's too big for the socket or the socket's too big for the ball. And then also with that, we'll pretty commonly see maybe like cysts or again, just from like increased friction present or like fraying of the tendons in and around the hip joint. Because as we're maybe having some of that excess like degeneration, those tendons are trying to work really hard too. So those things really go together often. And I love these deeper structures because I think if we see them on an MRI that we have a labral tear, we have impingement, we have a bone stress injury, it feels more daunting than like I have a hip flexor strain because it's not necessarily something that could heal as readily as a muscle. So I don't know, I love like meeting people in that like anxiety ridden place and like pulling them out.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. We need specialists like you, especially as you said, since it's such a complex area of the body where you're like, okay, what does that even mean? Like, there's a tear there. Okay, is it better now to train through it, to rest it up? I can't necessarily put, just ice on it, and it like, especially if it's been wear and tear, that's not gonna do anything at all. So yes, let's just say someone is, or in your specific scenario, you suddenly had pain there. You then found out there was a tear. How did you proceed from there?
Yes, totally. Maybe I'll break this up into like two parts here, which if you're so lucky, maybe it's just one. But yes, if someone had, I think on the spectrum of hip pain from a labral tear, it can be really like people, like 50% of the population has a labral tear and doesn't even know it. So lots of people are asymptomatic, have these findings, don't have any pain. On the other hand, some people are very painful. Like it's just extremely sore and it's really hard to kind of navigate and walk through. If you're somewhere in that spectrum, I would just totally recommend going to a physical therapist. My biggest like cheat code is like looking up people in your area that are like exposed to hips, like exposed to labral tears. And you could even just ask them and be like, hey, have you treated a 31-year-old woman with a labral tear who wants to get back to running, and have you had success? Honest to goodness, when I first started it, like as a physical therapist, the first time I saw a labral tear, I was like not well. I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? I barely learned about this in school. Am I going to break this person? I was like afraid to move her leg. So it took me years to refine this process. So if you feel like maybe your person is confused, I will just throw myself under the bus and say I was very confused. So it took me a while to get there. So have that kind of like maybe preliminary process. Go in, get it checked. They're really going to be able to walk you through, okay, this is appearing like it's the labrum, but also maybe we're having some low back involvement, or wow, things are really irritable right now. Let's do these couple of things to calm it down. And then as you get better, we can kind of deep dive into, is this more low back driven? Is this more tendon hamstring driven or whatever? So I think having that kind of like initial diagnosis is really awesome, not just from like a MRI or imaging perspective, but also from like a hands-on, how does your body move perspective. There's this great analogy where it's like you can put a phone in a like you could take a picture of a phone. So like let's say the picture is like the MRI or the X-ray, and it can show you that it's a phone, but it can never tell you if it's ringing. Like it's not you're not going to hear if it's ringing. So same thing, like when we get these structural findings on imaging, that's one thing, but then it's like, okay, how does this actually play out as your body is moving, and what kind of has caused it? So that's like number one. Hopefully your PT will really work you through the steps of getting back to daily life comfortably, even getting back to running comfortably. But I have found that a lot of even like great PTs, even like when I was in standard physical therapy practice, I would get people back to run walking, like some semblance of running. But if you really want to go to that next step of like, I want to run 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 days a week, I want to be able to train for a marathon, working with somewhat of like a performance coach, whether that's strength, running, both, I would say is like my best recommendation to teach you the skills of like, how am I going to do this when I'm 45? How am I going to do this when I'm 50, when I'm 60? And I think having both of those things would be kind of like my primary recommendation.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I mean, I'm such a big advocate for long-term thinking. And nowadays, longevity is such a big topic, and longevity is absolutely nothing if we don't also have quality of life. And for many people, that does include running of some way, shape, in some way, shape, or form. So, okay, let's say you are have started working with someone. Now, I mean, silly question perhaps, but since it is an injury, or if it is an injury that has resulted from overuse or a degradation, if we start back up running, or maybe even increase the volume of running or training that we're doing, are we not gonna re-aggravate it or re-injure it in that sense?
Yes, such a great question. Yes, so in my like framework in my brain, how I think of this is I always walk through three steps with my clients. So we do discover, develop, and then deploy. Deploy is you being back to doing the week setup that makes you feel satisfied. So maybe you're running 3 times a week, strength training twice a week, golfing with your kids, I don't know. Deploy is you being able to do what you want to do. In the discover phase, we're really like, okay, what's going on from like a mechanical perspective? Like, is your door hinge swinging off the access, and we need to improve like the mechanics behind it, so then you're not having as much rubbing into the labrum. Like, what mechanical things do we need to do to ensure that you're ready for the demands of running? This is like, I think a lot of people just go straight to strength training and they're like, I need to get strong, strong, strong. But if you're like strengthening this off-access door hinge, you're just kind of propagating these poor patterns. So really having like the strong foundational elements of like ensuring that your hip and your knee and your ankle can move through the full range of motion in a coordinated fashion really like sets us up for success. And then we can kind of get into some of the strength training. So in the discover phase, we're really figuring out what's wrong, quote unquote. And then we're also discovering like, What was your training load like? Were you running 6 days a week, 7 days a week, and it's cutting into your sleep? You're not doing really much strength training besides like banded work. Your runs were all kind of like garbage miles because you felt like crap while doing that. What was it? Or were you just inconsistent? And it was like you would run one time here and then kind of rest for a little bit and then run over here. Discovering what we need to discover, and then we go into the develop phase, and here is where we're really systematic. So we're like, okay, you have really poor stability at your hip. Let's do two stability exercises and one strength exercise, and that's going to be your plan for, the next couple of weeks. And then on the same kind of level, this develop phase, we're also looking at your running volume. So let's, instead of having 6 days a week of garbage miles, let's run, I don't know, 3 to 4 days a week of excellent miles where you feel really good. And we kind of just build those two things up together. So the exercises and the running volume. And then when you get back into this deploy phase, you're like, oh my gosh, okay, when I know if I want to run 4 days a week, I need to have adequate sleep. I need to have, maybe 2 days of strength training most weeks to like support me. If I'm feeling like crap, like maybe I'm gonna cross train instead of run. We'll kind of just learn what things work for you, in getting into the deploy phase.
An individualized approach really is the best way to go with everything, in my opinion, whether that is training, nutrition, lifestyle things, anything really. So I think that's amazing. And I think it's great that you have a specific framework. It also helps a client kind of understand like what you're taking them through and what you really want to look at. So that's really cool. Okay, so let's talk about your run coaching. Do you also work with people that don't have any previous injuries and are just like, I'm a recreational runner, but I want to take it to the next level. And how do you get like your training programs to your clients slash patients?
Yes, yeah, for sure. So most of my clients that I work with on a virtual level, or really all of them, go through my Empower HIIT program, which is really like the discover, develop, deploy. And people are coming in at different points. Like I have people who freshly finished PT, or they're like finishing PT and they're still kind of wonky with their hip, and they really just want to ensure that as they get back to running, they're like ready to go. On the other hand, I have gals who are like, I have a gal right now who just joined my program who was training, like she was probably in the last 3 weeks of training for the Marine Corps Marathon. And she was like, I just know that I have a history of like my low back and hip kind of like not going out, but like talking to me as I'm getting into these higher mileages. And she's like, I've kind of seen this with Marine Corps. So what I want to do is go through the Empower HIIT program and really ensure that I'm like set up and ready to go for the future. So for her, from like a coaching perspective, maybe it's a little bit less like nitpicky of like her mechanics, but it is for her, we're doing a little bit more solid like strength coaching. And then also just ensuring that as I'm kind of disseminating her runs to her, we're going through the framework of, okay, can you do your easy pace runs comfortably? Can you do your like speed work comfortably? Can you do your long run comfortably? So she's coming in at that point. What I would say, most of my clients do the Empower HIIT program. And then if we're gonna do like continuation performance coaching, typically they'll kind of just stay on with me after, because I know that they've built that really strong foundation. And then we can like, I mean, I have clients who now are like, do you think I should do the 50K with this much vertical gain or this much vertical gain? And I'm like, my how our problems have shifted.
That's awesome. Well, it's lovely how much you are or how deeply you're getting to know your clients. And I think that allows for better and better and better coaching because yeah, you just get to know their body and they get to know their own body better also. On that, like getting a little bit more specific. Well, I guess first of all, I have so many questions to ask you. First of all, I saw on your Instagram, because I always do a little bit of research, of course, before I interview somebody, and you were talking about two specific exercises that you think everybody should do, every runner should do for prevention, for strengthening the hip in general. Can you tell us what these exercises are and also why they are so good for the hip joint?
Yes, for sure. Excuse me. Okay. I would say I really love giving, like, because people ask me all the time, like, can you send me the best exercises for this? And I'm like, literally, no, like, I can't because I don't know you. They don't know what makes you tick, and I don't know all of these things. But I would say, like, my two kind of frameworks that I'm always going through are, number one, like, can you move your hip through the full range of motion? So if I want to get back to running, can I move my hip through the full range of motion while standing on my leg? So it's like a closed chain exercise, meaning that it's in the same position as I'm running. So for a runner, I want to make sure they can do something like a single leg squat, maybe down to a chair comfortably. I want to make sure, can they do like something like a rotational exercise around their hip? I love the hip airplane where you're kind of like standing on one leg, you're like tilted forward in almost like an RDL position or like a forward T, and then you're kind of pivoting your body over your stance leg. I want to ensure that like the 360 range of motion of the hip is comfortably as we're loaded, so that when I go for my run, my hip isn't like, oh my gosh, this is like the most like impact I've had through my hip in a while. And also one caveat on that, for running, we don't need a ton of range of motion to run. So I just want my clients to have enough like functional range of motion of their hip. Some people are going to have lacking internal rotation or bringing their knee to their chest, but like as they're standing on their leg, can they move their hip through a full range of motion comfortably? That's kind of the first thing that I'll go through with my clients. So again, like maybe single leg squats, hip airplanes, those are just two examples. And then kind of the second form of exercise I love for my runners is to ensure that they can do some sort of plyometric hopping on their leg. I once had a gal who I took through kind of initial movement screen, and I was like, okay, can you stand on one leg and then hop forward onto the other? She was like, I'm afraid to do that. And I was like, okay, can you tell me why? And she's like, well, I don't know, history of this. And the thing that really blew my mind, the reason I was so rude, is that she went for a 20-mile run the day before. And I was like, you're afraid to hop forward on one foot, but you ran 20 miles yesterday. Like, I was like, one third of a mile is equal to about 300 single leg hops. So if you're not prepared to be able to land on one foot and like have good control and land nice and soft, how is your hip ever going to be prepared for the demands of running? So, range of motion, and I think like plyometrics are kind of my baseline things for my runners.
Really great. And I'm a huge fan of unilateral work in general or assessment in general. So I think that's awesome that you have these single leg squats or RDLs, et cetera. Just to like also make sure there's like no imbalances, or if so, how can we address them, and so on. So on the point of I guess, yeah, foot positioning or just absorption as well. I think I'm sure a question that you often get is also like shoes. What is a good type of shoe? Because I think we see so many different things, and then you have the barefoot crowd, and then you have the other crowd that have like shoes with cushioning of, I don't know, 2 inches or something like this. You're like, which one is right? Is there a right or wrong? Does it depend on the individual anatomy? Give us your take on it.
Yes, oh my gosh. I do get this question a lot, and I think my stance is maybe kind of a hot take, maybe not. I really think that your shoe should be like the icing on the cake. So I think you should be able to walk around your house barefoot and feel comfortable. You should be able to do your strength training and whatnot barefoot and be able to like utilize your foot muscles. I think we're kind of in a culture of like we need so much orthotics and we need all this cushioning and all this stuff. And it really is a detriment because we're not using the thing that is like in contact with the ground that's going to give us so much sense of like where we physically are and like increase the ability to utilize more muscles up the chain. For example, I have a client who was doing her single leg squat, and I noticed like she was really like on the outside of her foot. She like couldn't, and like her toes were coming up, and she was like, yeah, I can never feel my glute. That's a huge thing people tell me all the time. I can never feel my glute. And I was like, okay, I want you to think of putting your weight through your heel, your big toe, and your pinky toe, and making like a tripod with your foot. She squats down, she comes back up, and she's like, oh my gosh, that is like the most activated single leg squat I've ever felt. And I'm like, yes, you're like getting input from from the ground and it's sending it up into your hip to like show you where you are in space and increase like the muscle recruitment. So I think we need to be able to do, and this could be a progressive thing, like you could work up to it, but we want to be able to do our exercises on a single or without our shoes on and be comfortable, and have a really strong foundation and not be reliant on shoes. And then from there, like I just feel like you can have fun with it. Like I love telling people to go to their local run store and kind of get fitted. Some of these places, like they're such shoe nerds and they know so many things. I always tend to go with like a relatively neutral shoe where it's not like a ton of cushioning, but it's also not like a complete barefoot minimalist situation. Kind of trial that. And then from there, you can get nuanced with like, do I need a wider toe box? Do I need, like, am I a person that is maybe more in a predisposition for stress fractures and I need actually like more cushioning, you know, somewhere and making sure you're addressing the underlying components there as well. But I think my biggest take is like, you shouldn't be reliant on the shoe. And then once you have that strong foundation, then you can kind of like start neutral and then get more nuanced with your shoes.
Yeah, I think that's great. Again, individualization. And that I didn't even have that question on my list, but that kind of brings up the question for me. If someone has, let's say, ankles that roll in, or knees that are more like curved to the outside, or X legs, or whatever you call that, like any kind of specific anatomical predisposition. Does that increase generally the chance for like a labral tear or something like that, potentially? Yeah, okay.
Yes. Yeah, that's a really good question. Yes. So, I would say yes for sure. Like if we are thinking that you're well, okay, I'm kind of going back and forth here. I think if you are naturally a person that like anatomically your knees just come in more, like you have more of that, it's called like valgus where your knees are coming in more, or maybe you're a person that just naturally has more like in toeing or out toeing or whatever. That is your body's like anatomy. So that's like how you were born. I hear a lot of times people are like, oh, I need to get rid of my anterior pelvic tilt, or I need to get rid of my posterior pelvic tilt. And I'm like, you actually don't, because that is like how you were created. And if you start operating out of that, you're actually going to change like the anatomical, not the anatomical structure, but you're going to change how your body's recruiting and going through different motions, which actually could put you at a predisposition for injury. So maybe, I don't know. Stop DIYing stuff like that. But then on the other hand, I would say like if you're dynamically, like when you go into your single leg squat and you're having a lot of extra knee coming in, or it's really hard for you to control that pronation, that excess motion is motion that your body has to like attenuate for. It has to make up for. So if I'm doing a single leg squat and everything is kind of moving in the parameters that it should, my body is using less energy. But if I'm having to do a single leg squat and my knee is wobbling all over the place, my muscles are going to have to like attenuate that. And if they can't, then maybe it's going to go to my joints, my ligaments, and then we start to see some of maybe that like that degeneration, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like the explanation there. Again, individualization. I mean, going back to the point of training, I'm curious about a couple of things too here. And I don't know if that is your sort of clientele or not, but the HYROX crowd nowadays, like I feel like running has had a huge upsurge of like run groups, people getting into running because they want to do a HYROX race, people that are just doing more like hybrid type training, moving away from the CrossFit, like heavy functional training, more into the running and light functional training. Yeah, like do you see that in your clients too, or have you had people that come to you and are like, I want to run a HYROX race, how do I best train for that? And two, what's your opinion on that sort of training style?
Oh my gosh, yes, that's so fun. I don't think I have trained any HYROX athletes. I do have friends that do HYROX and compete in HYROX, so it's fun to like watch their training cycles and all of that jazz. But one topic that I do talk about with my clients a lot is like periodization, which is just kind of like a fluff word, but like we'll just call it seasons of training. And for my clients that are like, I want to run a marathon, I'm like, amazing. That's going to take a lot of your time and it's going to be incredible. So maybe before we go into your marathon, let's maybe ensure that we're getting like a really good strength block in. So then you're kind of fresh, like ready to go into that. For these like quote unquote hybrid athletes, such like a buzz term now, for the High Rocks crowd, you have to be good at two things. So you have to be, you want to be strong and you want to be fast. So I don't know, like if I were to be like a High Rocks coach, I am curious on like the ninja work that they do to like make you really good at both. But my best stab would be like having some sort of like a strength build and then also having some sort of like a kind of a speed system to ensure that like you're building up to and your body can handle like running and moving quickly. But yeah, I'm not entirely sure. It's not like my wheelhouse, but I am actually curious on how they kind of curate these athletes to do so well in these hybrid events.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time before you get to coach your first High Rocks athlete. And
Yes.
from what I have heard, that a lot of the like, if you're doing it competitively at all and not just socially, it really comes down to the run portion. I mean, since the run portion of the event makes up 8 kilometers, and like that is a huge portion. So most people are able to quote unquote make up time on that. If you're a good runner, you're much more likely to do well than if you're like, oh, I'll just cruise on the run portion and push on the other events. So yeah, no, I was just curious if that was something that you have worked in. And I guess another sort of specific crowd, and that's probably more so our listeners here, most of which are probably going to be women, sort of ages between 35 and 55, possibly. So many of them going through the menopause transition. And I'm sure
Yes.
you're aware of like more and more data coming out in regards to menopause, menopause training, whatever the heck that is supposed to mean. But yeah, also people saying like, oh, menopausal women shouldn't be doing zone 2, and menopausal women, you know, should only do HIIT training and lift heavy stuff and blah, blah, blah. A, have you are you dealing with that too? Do you hear that? And are people coming to you like, oh, I love running, but I'm told I shouldn't run zone 2, I should only do HIIT? How do you respond to that?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. This is such a not up and coming, but such a wide, it's a hot topic right now, is what I'm trying to say. And it's so fun. Like, I have so many clients who are kind of in that like perimenopause arena, and then some who have even like hit menopause and are like learning how their body functions now. And really with my clients, like I don't always say this. Maybe I say this to myself because this maybe sounds rude, but I'm like, you need to earn your running. Like, you have to be able to have that foundational coordination and also to have the strength training that you're doing consistently to be able to support your runs. And like, I'll have clients come to me and they're like, I want to run 6 days a week. And I'm like, okay. And then we get into the specifics of, okay, but you do need to do like X amount of strength training per week. And then at the end of our time together, they're like, my goal has changed. Like, I want to be able to do strength training, and I'm probably going to run 4 days a week because that's what I can kind of muster up schedule wise. So within that kind of sect of people that are coming to me, I'm getting a lot of perimenopausal women who are like, I also know that I need to lift heavy. They're like, I have done like the, you know, Pilates, I've done the like compound movement HIIT classes, or sorry, like accessory movement HIIT classes. I've done, you know, lots of running, and they're really like, they're very aware, like, I need to shift and lift heavy. So that's been like a huge kind of byproduct and joy of my program is like, I've seen these women build the foundation, learn how to actually lift heavy and be able to run. And honestly, like, feel better in their 30s, 40s, 50s than they did in their 20s because they have these principles of like, I'm going to strength train and I'm going to run. I would also say there's like a unique, like because I'm working with women that have hip pain, oftentimes like the gluteal tendons or like some of the muscles around the hip can be a little bit more impacted in the perimenopausal or menopausal state. So it's super fun to do like kind of specific loading for those tissues, and watch those women be like, oh my gosh, like I'm not having like the pain that I was, when I first came to you. Because of maybe some of these hormonal changes.
That's amazing. And yeah, I truly believe and see and have seen that if we combine strength training with run training, let's say doing more lateral sort of work or, work in different planes, also, we're getting like runners are getting so much stronger. And from, again, I'm not an expert in this area, but from what I see, really more in terms of running is not always better. Sometimes people achieve better results in terms of time and how they feel if they run 3 or 4 times a week instead of six and just like doing the same thing as opposed to incorporating some intervals, some hill stuff, some, and maybe one long run per week and not just like running the same 7 miles every single day type of thing. And then of course adding in the benefits of strength training for osteoporosis and all the other good stuff, that of course also strengthens the hips. So I'm glad you see that in your clients too. And I do hope that women don't stop completely with their regular running just to incorporate hit just because some sort of influencer or maybe even doctor or so says that, because it's supposed to be optimal. And I think optimal is totally overrated if it comes at the cost of what do we enjoy? What are we going to stick with? And if you're someone who's like, I just love the monotony of like regular running because it gives me mental clarity, because it's kind of like good for just in general zoning out as opposed to doing HIIT, which is totally different. If you've had a full day at the office and you take care of the kids and you need to do all the organizing and then following another all out max effort sort of thing can tip people over the edge. Whereas if you're like, I just want to run in nature, maybe some nice music, maybe absolutely nothing, you can kind of let your thoughts just run or think of absolutely nothing again. That's different. Like not one or the other has to be optimal. So I think if we find a good combination with some good coaching from someone like you, that's absolutely amazing. And of course, Sarah, I'm gonna link all your handles in the show notes so people can go and check out your content. And I just want to say thank you for your time. It's been a true pleasure chatting with you.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. This has been so fun. I've loved it.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Sarah. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go. If you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more. And feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.